Hello there, I'm Rob, a producer on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 6th of October 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity Beacon Centre. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, Alexa, play Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Calling 01902 213 210. Visiting our website, beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have myself, Rob, Mina, Anne, Ed, Helen, Tanya, Ian, Simon, Angela, Darren, Liz, Christine, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, information about how to avoid doorstep scammers, the weather, news from Guide Dogs UK and their technology access scheme for school children, sounds of nature, and rounding all that off with a concise biography of James Joyce. But first, we have our Guess the Sound quiz. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and Mean will reveal the answer later, alongside the usual quiz answers. Now we start, as always, with some local news, brought to us by Christine, Liz, Ian, Ed, and first up, it's Angela.
Calls to sell off Wolverhampton Council's HQ to developers have been made following renewed criticism of a £25 million revamp of the building. Conservative councillor Uday Singh said the Labour-run authority should move staff out of the civic centre and into offices around the city, with more people working remotely as a result of COVID. He told members of a council scrutiny panel he was disappointed not to see the building being considered in a review of public-owned assets. The Civic Centre underwent a major refurbishment in 2016, but Councillor Singh said the revamp hadn't added £25 million to the value of the asset. In response, Labour councillors and senior officers said the overhaul of the Civic Centre was aimed at prolonging the life of the building and investing in staff. Figures presented at the meeting showed of the 4,217 council staff, a total of 1,998 were on flexible working patterns. A further 1,766 were field employees, such as social workers, and 453 were fixed. Councillor Singh said, "Now, that money was spent, and from an investment point of view, that hasn't added £25 million worth of value on this asset, even though we've revamped it. If we presume this property is worth about £20 to £25 million, you've spent £25 million refurbishing it, but I don't think it's worth £50 million. I don't think anyone would be willing to pay £50 million if we were to sell it, unless there was a property explosion or somebody was mad enough to buy above the market value. The council has over 1,000 assets, so we could look to divide the people amongst them. Now, with fixed and flexible working patterns, I still think we need to have a conversation about what we do with the civic centre."
A West Bromwich Albion fan found guilty of racially abusing one of his own team's players on Facebook has been jailed for 8 weeks. Simon Silwood posted a message saying Romain Sawyers should win the Baboon d'Or, a sarcastic reference to the Ballon d'Or trophy following his team's 5-0 defeat to Manchester City at the Hawthorns on January the 26th. The 50-year-old denied the offence, telling police his message on the group was stupid, not racial, and claiming autocorrect had changed the word buffoon to baboon. Silwood, who has been banned for life by West Brom, was convicted this month at Walsall Magistrates Court after District Judge Bryony Clark ruled he was not a credible witness and had meant the post to be offensive. The court heard that Sawyers, who is currently on loan at Stoke City and was reporting a separate alleged racist social media post when he was shown Silwood's message, was left feeling harassed, alarmed and distressed after reading it. Passing sentence on Silwood of Randall Close, King's Winford, Dudley at Birmingham Magistrates Court, District Judge Clark told him, "This is, Mr. Silwood, a serious offence. There is no place for racism or racist abuse online. This clearly, in my view, crosses the custody threshold. I assess the remorse you have for your actions as very minimal indeed. In my view, it, the offence, falls into the category of greatest harm. We have to accept it had a wider impact and a substantial impact on Mr. Sawyers. In my view, taking into account what I have heard, there is no reason to suspend the sentence." Silwood, who was ordered to pay a £128 victim surcharge and a total of £1,000 in costs and compensation, was charged following an investigation carried out by PC Stuart Ward, who is the UK's first dedicated hate crime officer within a football unit.
Students and staff have been asked to start wearing face coverings in communal areas of schools amid a continuing surge in coronavirus cases. Leaders say the safety measure, a requirement scrapped when restrictions were lifted, will help to curb rising infection rates in Wolverhampton. It comes as councils across the region and nationally reported the number of COVID-19 cases were rocketing, with people asked to continue to take tests. Councillor Dr. Michael Hardacre, Cabinet Member for Education and Skills in Wolverhampton, said, "We need to do all we can to stop the spread of COVID-19, and the wearing of face coverings has an important role to play in this." Face coverings were mandatory in communal areas in secondary schools throughout the spring and summer term and certainly seemed to help keep infections down. So with cases now rising once more, it is sensible for schools to adopt this policy once more. A number of secondary schools in the city have already reintroduced the requirement to wear face coverings unless an individual is exempt for medical reasons, as was the case after the reopening of schools earlier this year. Head teacher Andrea Stevens of Colton Hills Community School, which has already adopted the measure, said, "We have taken a range of measures as the number of confirmed positive cases within school has risen, particularly in Year 8, and are working closely with public health to ensure we are doing all we can to prevent any further spread. With this in mind, we have already reviewed our current safety measures and have decided to reintroduce face coverings for staff and students in communal areas or when staff are in close contact with students in the classroom, unless they are exempt. In addition, we have staggered departure times for Year 8 pupils and have asked all adults to wear face coverings when they are on the school run."
West Midlands Police is set to cut the number of emergency response hubs operating across the region under money-saving plans. As part of a new estate strategy, set to be signed off in November, the number of police response hubs will be slashed from 10 to 8. The force had initially planned to close 4 hubs, but is now expected to keep facilities open in Bloxwich and Stechford following a review. Emergency response hubs are sites where officers are based to respond to urgent requests for help, including riots and major crimes. Under the plans, officers will be based in Wolverhampton, Dudley, currently Brierley Hill, Bourneville Lane, Coventry Central, Chelmsley Wood and Park Lane, as well as in Stechford and Bloxwich. Sandwell and North Birmingham will lose their hubs. The review into the force's controversial estates programme, which could see several Black Country police stations close, has been called by West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner, PCC, Simon Foster. It follows widespread opposition to plans to close stations including Aldbury, Wensfield, Tipton and Aldridge. A report presented to the PCC's strategic board meeting recommended keeping 8 hubs rather than 6 because the force was taking on new officers as part of the government's uplift programme. The move would also reduce the time it takes officers to respond to crime, it added. Once complete, the estate programme is expected to save West Midlands Police £5 million a year in running and maintenance costs. According to the report, it will also save £24 million in backlog maintenance costs and more than £40 million from the sale of sites, with the cash invested in projects such as the new integrated control centre in Aston and the proposed Black Country headquarters in Dudley.
People have been urged to have their say on plans to build thousands of homes on greenbelt sites across the Black Country. More than 7,000 houses will go up on the land under the Black Country plan as part of a target of 76,000 homes needed by 2039. Now, with the consultations set to end on the 11th of October, council chiefs in the region have urged people to have their say on the issue. The proposals affect greenbelt land in Dudley, Sandwell, Walsall and Wolverhampton, which has prompted anger from campaigners. Councillor Iqbal Padda, Sandwell Council's Regeneration and Growth Cabinet member, said, "The Black Country plan is about where people will live and work, where they'll shop, go to school or keep active. It is key to achieving our vision of a thriving, optimistic and resilient community in Sandwell. The Black Country plan will guide the future of the borough for the next 20 years. The comments received in this consultation will help shape the future for all the borough's residents and businesses, not just those who live or work near the site proposed in the plan. We need to hear from as many people as possible, and I would urge everyone to take a few minutes to complete the consultation. The consultation runs until Monday the 11th of October. People can find out more and complete the survey at blackcountryplan.dudley.gov.uk.
Now it's time to hand over to Helen, who has for us this week's Beacon Update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre. Well, hello October. I don't know about you, but I just don't know where the months are going this year. Whatever your plans are though for this month, don't forget, our lifestyle team will be on hand delivering free virtual activities to keep you entertained each and every week. Our sessions will be running throughout the month, apart from on October the 8th, when we'll be hosting an open day at our centre that I'll tell you more about in a few minutes. If you'd like to find out how to join any of our virtual sessions or even to come along on our open day, email Kim Williams at kwilliams@beaconvision.org. That's kwilliams@beaconvision.org or call 01902 880 111. Now, have you planned your outfit for our Bright for Sight campaign yet? It's really easy to get involved. You just need to dig out your brightest clothes to wear on World Sight Day, which is October the 14th. You can find out more or donate via our website. Just head to www.beaconvision.org/bright-for-sight. Or to donate £5 now, text BRIGHT to 70085. Text messages cost £5 plus one standard rate message. Don't forget, you can tag us in your pictures from the day on social media using the hashtag BrightForBeacon. During the campaign, we're also sharing some top tips on how you can use colour to make the most of your site. One simple way is by using brightly coloured tape on your cupboards to identify any hazards. We'd love to know your own tips if you've got any. Why not get in touch? Now, onto that open day. Are you looking for support with your sight loss? Our lifestyle team are holding the event so you can find out some of the ways they can help you, such as improving mobility, regaining confidence in the kitchen, or just trying some new activities. If you want to find out how we could make a difference for you, then why not come along between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. on October the 8th, when you'll be able to try some free taster sessions of some of our most popular activities. To find out more or to book a slot, call 01902 880 111. Or email inquiries@beaconvision.org, or you can always drop a line to Kim, whose email I give you a bit earlier. Lastly this week, we're really sad to let you know that we've been alerted to bogus posts on Facebook pages that are claiming to collect clothes from your home to take to Beacon shops. We wanted to let you know that we don't currently collect clothing donations from your home, although our shops are still very happy to receive your good quality items. Beacon will, however, collect furniture from your house, but only if you contact us directly on 01902 880 111 to arrange. We'll also let you know the name of our driver to identify them. If you've got any doubts, please contact us for more information. We're always so grateful for the items donated to Beacon and want to make sure they're used how you intend them to be, which is to support people with sight loss in your community. If you've got any queries about our shops, get in touch. The number is 01982 880 111 and you just need option 2 to speak to a member of our retail team. That's it for this week. Hopefully, I'll be back to speak to you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that update, Helen. Up now, we have another block of local news. And we start with Liz.
A Black Country business leader has warned the region is facing a tough winter on the economic front. Ahead of the start of the Conservative Party conference in Manchester, Corin Crane, chief executive of the Black Country Chamber of Commerce, is calling on the government for immediate solutions to the obstacles limiting economic growth, productivity and prosperity for multiple manufacturers across the Black Country and the wider West Midlands. Mr. Crane said, "Whilst businesses are fighting for post-COVID recovery and trying to remain optimistic about future economic growth, both domestically and internationally, the interrupted flow of goods and services, heightened uncertainty, spiralling costs and delays are dampening this confidence. Following the creation of a briefing document, we worked alongside fellow business leaders, agencies and support organisations across the region to highlight challenges and prospective solutions, and we want the government to hear our message loud and clear. Businesses face daily challenges with the increasing cost of raw materials, particularly steel, aluminium, semiconductors, polythene and cardboard, while shortages of raw materials entering the supply chain are particularly concerning for those in the steel sector and exacerbated by steel safeguarding measures and quotas. For our businesses importing and exporting across the world, they continue to face increased shipping costs, particularly to Asia and North America. There are mountains of paperwork and heavy bureaucracy which continues to harm exporting to the EU. Coupled with VAT payment challenges, it's hardly surprising that European businesses look less favourably to UK companies for purchases due to added complexity of importing and exporting and future trading uncertainty, which is having a detrimental effect," he explained. Contributing factors include increased time delays and costs businesses now incur with the need to complete customs and VAT declarations post-EU exit.
Calls have been made to stop COVID marshal pen pushers pestering Wolverhampton businesses rebuilding following lockdown. Opposition Conservative councillors have questioned why the Labour-run authority has extended the contract for the COVID support advisers until the new year, despite restrictions ending in July. The scheme has cost a total of £415,000 to date, with £27,000 of that being spent in the past 2 months. Originally, 20 were hired to enforce mask wearing and ensure social distancing in business premises, but that has now been reduced to a team of 11. Conservative councillor Ellis Terrell said, with legal restrictions being lifted on July 19th, he struggled to see why they were still needed in the city, adding businesses should be left to bounce back without interference from pen pushers. But the authority said the team is still carrying out vital tasks, such as going door to door to encourage vaccine take-up, distributing face coverings and handing out information and advice. Councillor Steve Evans, Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for City Environment and Climate Change, said, "The pandemic is not over, far from it. Infection rates remain high, and it is important that people remain cautious and take precautions to protect themselves and others from illness and spreading the virus. Our COVID support officers have played a varied role. They were recruited to help people stay safe, provide information, assist businesses to follow infection control measures in a supportive way, and provide reassurance in what has been a worrying and often confusing time for a great many people. We have fewer of them than we did at the height of the pandemic, but they are still providing a vital service in ensuring businesses continue to follow infection control measures. They have distributed face coverings to the public, provided advice and information about COVID testing and vaccination centres, and have promoted our COVID compliance grant to businesses to encourage take-up.
Company Shop in Dudley and food surplus app Too Good To Go have teamed up to establish a new initiative aimed at preventing even more surplus food from going to waste. The partnership will see Company Shop Group create magic bags packed with good-to-eat items that have a best-before date of that day. Users of the Too Good To Go app will then be able to search, select and collect an available magic bag from this discount supermarket on Birmingham New Road. David Lennon, Deputy Managing Director at Company Shop Group, said, "At Company Shop Group, we are always looking for pioneering new ways to reduce waste, and working in collaboration with other organisations across the sector is a brilliant way to achieve this. Following the success of the pilot programme, we are delighted to be rolling out our partnership with Too Good To Go across all of our stores, which is a first-of-its-kind initiative for the group." Pascalis Loukaidis, UK Managing Director of Too Good To Go, said, "I'm thrilled that we're rolling out our partnership with Company Shop Group. Not only does wasting food not make sense, but it also accounts for 10% of global greenhouse gas emissions. If we are to tackle climate change, then fighting food waste is one of the most impactful actions we can take. Magic bags can be accessed by a user through the app, and they do not have to have Company Shop Group membership, which is required to shop in store."
Like long-lost brothers, the region's Conservative mayor and a Labour council leader embraced as they commemorated another positive development for the city. The opening of a new rails training centre at a local college is hardly the most dramatic initiative, but it is undoubtedly another step in the evolution of Wolverhampton, which may be just starting to drag itself up after the years in the doldrums. The centre at Wolverhampton College's Wellington Road campus in Bilston features more than 40 metres of railway track so students can get hands-on experience in learning the skills needed to build and maintain rail lines. It is the first in the country to offer training on slab track technology, which is used in the construction of high-speed rail lines such as HS2, and will provide training on traditional rail and tram lines. It will offer courses for newcomers to the industry, as well as existing employees wanting to upskill, while free training will be laid on for the unemployed. Thousands of retail industry jobs are expected to be created in the region in the coming years, and it is here where much of the training will take place. The facility is the latest in a long line of developments that has been born out of a strong working relationship between two men who do not exactly see eye to eye in the political sense. While Mayor Andy Street would never claim to be a true blue Tory, he certainly does not sit on the same side of the political fence as Councillor Ian Brookfield, who once said he shares similar values to Jeremy Corbyn, yet they have largely managed to put their party differences aside to work together for the good of the city. The proof, as they say, is in the pudding, and this particular partnership has up to now resulted in investment including a new railway station, the I-9 office development, and the city hosting the National Brownfield Institute. Mr. Street has always vowed to work with leaders from all parties for the good of the region, and in Wolverhampton's case, that has certainly been true.
More details of a 5-year improvement plan for the Merrihill Shopping Centre have been revealed. The revamped Merrihill brand launched last week with new signs going up around the centre. Among the 5-year plan for the centre in Briley Hill are food pop-ups championing local retailers and suppliers, better signage aimed at improving the link-up between the shopping centre and the surrounding bars and restaurants at the waterfront, new districts dedicated to entertainment, fashion or health and well-being. Meanwhile, the Primark store has just been expanded and a Smith's Toys superstore is to open at the centre in coming weeks. A major raft of improvements for Maryhill were announced in July, designed to attract more leisure attractions and restaurants to Maryhill by 2025. Jonathan Poole, centre manager at Maryhill, said, "We are so excited to finally reveal the new branding for Maryhill and formally kick off our 5-year transformation plan for this destination. Though we will soon have a new look, the iconic Maryhill name everyone has come to know and love since the centre first opened in 1986 will remain the same. It has been all change at Maryhill this summer, and I would like to extend the warmest of welcomes to the many new retailers who have taken space at the centre in recent months. I would also like to thank the thousands of shoppers who visit Maryhill each and every day, especially those who took part in our biggest piece of customer research in over a decade as we prepared for the future."
With another collection of questions to ponder over, up next, we have Mina.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. In what year was America's Statue of Liberty dedicated? Question 2. What should we all do on the first day of October each year? Question 3. What was the Anglo-Saxon word for October? Question 4. In Saxon times, what was traditionally made in October? Question 5. In what year did McDonald's open its first restaurant? And finally, question 6. Where are church bells traditionally rung on October the 7th? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show, but for now, good luck!
Cheers for those questions, Mina. Up now, we're heading to another block of local news. And kicking this off, we have Angela.
A butcher has been given an emergency service award for using CPR techniques learned from TV shows to save a shopper's life. Gordon Tranter sprang into action after the woman collapsed outside Alan Warwick Butcher's in Moor Centre, Briley Hill, on June the 17th. The 66-year-old, who had moments earlier left the butcher, survived and is recovering following surgery after Mr. Tranter rushed to her side to carry out chest compressions. His efforts were rewarded at a surprise presentation at the shop, which was attended by around 30 well-wishers. The grandfather of two, 57, explains, "To be honest, I think I did what anyone else would have done in a similar situation. I've worked in Briley Hill at various butcher shops since 1979. I know a lot of people in the town and I'd never seen the lady before the incident. She came in and ordered two beefsteaks, which had been on offer on our Facebook page. As she left, she keeled over outside. I don't know what came over me. Quite a few people gathered round her and her husband was beside himself, but no one was doing anything. I've seen CPR done on TV on programmes like 24 Hours in A&E and Casualty, so I thought any CPR was better than none. A lady whom I didn't know came to help me and phoned 999 while I started the compressions. Someone was telling me to try the kiss of life, but that's not being done at the moment due to the COVID pandemic. I did some compressions and the lady did some. We lost the poor lady a few times, but the emergency operator told us to keep trying. They told us to turn her onto her side to keep her airway open. Then we were told to roll her on her back and keep pressing due to her condition. We could hear the ambulance coming. The crew took over when they arrived and used their defibrillator before taking the lady to hospital. The family have phoned us up at the shop to thank us and to say that she is recovering, which is good news."
A healthcare at home provider that operates in the West Midlands is creating 5,000 new jobs across the UK. Sarah has filled 10,000 jobs during the pandemic to bolster the social care sector. It is one of Europe's fastest growing companies after being launched less than 5 years ago. It has Home Care for You offices in Briley Hill, Kidderminster and Wolverhampton, and also has a Stoke-on-Trent office covering Staffordshire. It reached its initial goal of filling 10,000 jobs during the pandemic by the end of 2021, several months ahead of schedule. The 5,000 new roles are mainly in frontline healthcare services such as carers and nurses. Sarah is offering professional carers a new £500 Golden Hello bonus, which also applies to those who have joined the company since late August. Applicants for professional carer roles do not need to hold specific skills or qualifications to apply for an advertised role, as the company's technology enables the firm to train, certify and deploy new carers in a matter of days. Co-founder and chief executive, Dr. Ben Marathapu, said, "At the start of the pandemic, we set out to solve two of the most pressing issues facing the UK. Firstly, we wanted to reduce pressures placed on the NHS due to the pandemic by bringing more talent into the care sector. And secondly, we wanted to offer jobs to thousands of people to help counter the unemployment crisis, allowing them to retrain and gain fulfilling careers in healthcare."
Pringles tubes and other paper containers with metal ends are now being accepted at the Stourbridge Tip after a deal was struck. Dudley Council made the move, which also applies to containers for hot chocolate and nuts, among other items, to help boost recycling. It means residents will be able to recycle their containers at specialist locations at the Household Waste and Recycling Centre. Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Cabinet Member for Public Realm, said, "While paper containers with metal ends such as Pringle tubes can't be recycled through council recycling collections, we're glad to be able to offer this facility at the tip. Our residents have always responded well to the different recycling schemes we've implemented, and we hope that they will take full advantage of this new service." Chiefs made an agreement with the Alliance for Beverage Cartons and the Environment and Consumer Products Europe to launch the scheme.
A walk-through coronavirus testing site has opened up in the centre of Wolverhampton in a bid to boost testing in the city. The facility has opened up on Railway Street car park, situated in Oxford Street, and will be for people with symptoms. The new site, accessed through booking, has appointments available each day and can be accessed without a car. Jenny Harris, CEO of UK Health Security Agency, said, "This new walkthrough site is part of our ongoing work to make it even easier for people who need a PCR test to get one. If you have developed a new continuous cough, a high temperature or a loss or change in sense of smell or taste, or you are asked to or advised to go and get a test, please book one and follow any advice you're given. As we return to a more familiar way of life, testing and isolating when necessary remain a vital way of controlling the spread of the virus and protecting one another."
Work is progressing on the new Sandvik Coromant UK headquarters in the Black Country following a £5 million investment by the West Midlands Combined Authority. West Midlands Mayor Andy Street visited the site of the new headquarters off Manor Way in Hells Owen to see the project, which will create a new high-tech innovation hub for metal cutting. Sandvik Coromant employees, currently based in an old office and warehouse located elsewhere on the company's existing site in Manor Way, will transfer over to the new 18,000 square foot sustainable headquarters once it is completed by developer Stoford at the end of 2022. The old buildings will then be demolished and the land, subject to planning permission, redeveloped for housing. The investment is the latest from the West Midlands Combined Authority devolved housing and regeneration programme, which is providing new homes, jobs and commercial floor space across the West Midlands, helping the region's economic recovery from COVID-19. Mr Street said, "Sandvik Coromant has a rich history based in the Black Country and I am really pleased that the West Midlands Combined Authority has been able to put its cash on the table to help that story to continue. Not only is this another brilliant example of how the West Midlands Combined Authority prioritises brownfield land for regeneration to create new local jobs, but it also shows how serious we are about tackling the climate emergency. Sustainable developments are key to making this happen, and with its solar panels, EV charging points and rainwater harvesting technology, Sandvik Coromant's new headquarters is exactly the kind of sustainable design we need.
Now we hear from Anne, who has news on the charity Guide Dog's new initiative to provide free assistive technology devices for school-aged children.
Hello, this is Anne with an item from the charity Guide Dogs UK. For children with a vision impairment, technology is vital. It develops learning, creativity, life skills, and ultimately confidence and independence. At Guide Dogs, we believe children with a vision impairment should have access to technology. That's why we're launching Tech for All, offering a free Apple iPad or iPhone to children and young people aged between 3 and 18, with visual impairments to use outside of school. We know how important these devices are to a child's development and learning at home or just to have fun and explore the activities and interests they enjoy. While technology in schools remains the responsibility of local authorities, it's important for children with no or low vision to also have their own device at home. We are committed to making this possible for children in the UK with a vision impairment. So we're offering free iPads and iPhones for children and young people aged 3 to 18 with vision impairment in the UK for a limited time. We'll offer iPads to visually impaired children aged 3 to 18, while secondary school aged children aged 11 to 18 may choose an iPhone instead. These devices have excellent accessibility features built in as standard, such as screen magnification, voiceover and audio descriptions to make many activities easier, like reading in larger fonts, magnifying photos and keeping in touch with friends. We'll be there to help you and your child make the most of their new device by providing online guides and tutorials, so your child can use it to independently play their favourite games, listen to music or audiobooks, watch shows, and connect with family and friends in the format that works best for them. To apply for one of these devices for your child, completely free of charge, simply fill in our online form. As part of the application, we'll ask you to provide proof that your child has a vision impairment. There is also a section on the necessary criteria on whether your child is eligible, under eligibility criteria. These are available while stocks last and subject to receipt of proof of a child's vision impairment. If these devices aren't right for your child's needs, we also offer grants for specialist assistive technology devices or software, such as laptops or desktop computers with screen reading software, refreshable braille displays, video magnifiers, or enlarged keyboards that can provide a fully customed experience to meet your child's preferred style of learning and way they get information. We also provide grants for sensory equipment and toys to help your child meet important development milestones with a choice of sensory packages with toys carefully selected by our experts for different age ranges. The TNF link to their website is tnflink.uk/10u. That's tnflink.uk/10u. If you have any problems using this form or have any special requirements, you can call their team on 0800 781 1444. That's 0800 781 1444, between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday to Friday.
We now head into our final block of local news, brought to us by Liz, Ian, Angela, and first up, it's Christine.
A blue plaque has been unveiled to mark the life of Tipton district nurse and author Edith Cotterill in the presence of two of her relatives. Nurse Edith, who died aged 80 in 1997, took up writing after the tragic death of her teenage daughter Judith from a brain tumour. And in 1986, she penned Nurse on Call about the trials and tribulations of working as a district nurse in the 1950s West Midlands. It was a hit and made it into the Sunday Times bestsellers chart. During her training in the 1930s, Edith's long hours on the wards included encouraging leeches to attach to patients and the disposal in the furnace of amputated limbs. After the birth of daughters Judith and Elizabeth, she returned to work in the 1950s as a district nurse. Tipton Civic Society and the Cotterill Farm community teamed up to raise £600, which more than covered the cost of the heritage sign, showing the pride her area has for her. Two of the VIPs present at the unveiling ceremony last week were directly related to Edith. Ivan Warren, who is Edith's son-in-law, was there with his daughter, Julie Warren Kyle. They watched as Mayor of Sandwell, Mushtaq Hussein, carried out the official unveiling ceremony at Jubilee Park Community Centre in Powis Avenue. Residents and businesses based in the town and Great Bridge all chipped in, donating anything from £5 to £100. In addition to the plaque, they put on a buffet for the guests at the unveiling ceremony, and any remaining proceeds will be donated to the Owen Street Tree of Light display. Nurse Edith was educated at Wolverhampton Girls High School and was formerly of Horsley Road, Tipton.
A theatre is set to echo the sounds and sights of the Windrush generation. Rush, A Joyous Jamaican Journey, will be coming to Wolverhampton Grand Theatre to tell the story of reggae music and the Windrush generation. Narrated by comedian John Simmitt, the show features the music of the likes of Desmond Dekker, Jimmy Cliff, Bob Marley, Lord Kitchener and Millis Moore, all performed by the 11-piece JA Reggae Band. Owen Miller, who is the show's writer, director and producer, said the idea had come from his experiences as a child in the 1970s, watching how his elders enjoyed the music and hearing their stories. I would sit there at 119 Linwood Road in the front room and see my elders dancing and having a party. Although I never listened to that music as I was into The Sweet and David Bowie, he explained. Now, years after they've passed on, I speak to the generation and learn so much about them and how when they came over here, they were told their qualifications meant nothing. So I decided to write the story to show the good as well as the bad. It's been great to see the reactions as people have come to me and said it wasn't what they were expecting, but they're really happy with what they saw, and it's great to take people on a journey. Tour manager Danny McCullough spoke about the reaction to the tour, which comes to the Grand on November the 16th, saying that people had needed little urging to get up and dance. She said, "It's been great and we absolutely love seeing everyone just getting up and dancing, and we've not had to encourage anyone as it's just been a natural thing. We can feed off this and we have a great time on the stage seeing everyone having a great time in the audience. And we get so many nice messages on social media from people saying what a great time they've had. They'll tell us that the music is great and the show is funny, but they've also moved by the experiences of people as well."
Poundland is closing its town centre store in Stourbridge after its lease came to an end, bosses have confirmed. The discount store in the Rye Market shopping centre on the town's high street is shutting its doors for good this Wednesday. A spokesman for the chain said, "We are as disappointed as our colleagues and customers to be closing our store in Rye Market shopping centre, Stourbridge. Sadly, our lease has expired. When we close a store, it goes without saying we always work hard to look after colleagues directly affected."
A social group has brought a touch of colour to a shopping centre as it hosted its first face-to-face activity class since COVID-19 restrictions were lifted. LGBT Plus Sparkle Group work in partnership with the Leonard Cheshire Charity to put on the sessions, which take place in the Manda Centre Community Hub in Wolverhampton. Members have been learning how to make rainbow wreaths with the help of Jane James, who runs the workshops on Friday mornings between 10 a.m. and noon. Paul Ryder and Marcus Cotterill, founders of LGBT Plus Sparkle, started their social group after a previous LGBT Plus community hub was closed about 8 years ago. Mr. Ryder said the aim of the event was to bring people together to make new friends, and everyone is welcome to join in and participate in the wreath making. The reason we set this social group up 17 months ago is because there was a massive gap for the LGBT community in Wolverhampton and surrounding areas. Sessions are taught by Jane James, who was previously the Lifelong Learning Development Officer at the Bantock House Museum in Wolverhampton from 2002 to 2013. Many of the members taking part said they enjoyed the event, with participant Kay describing what she enjoyed about it. She said, "I feel like it's good for the LGBT community as we get to meet new people who are also LGBT. It's good to be able to do this because there hasn't been much going on in the city, so I feel this is good for LGBT people."
Artwork designed to honour Abraham Darby I, the father of the Industrial Revolution, has finally been unveiled at the gateway to where he was born. Abraham Darby was born in the late 1600s in Wren's Nest in Woodseton, Staffordshire, which is now part of Dudley. He went on to develop a method of producing pig iron in a blast furnace, fuelled by coke rather than charcoal. This process marked a major step forward in the production of pig iron and made it possible to manufacture thin castings that could compete with brass in the manufacture of pots and other hollow ware. Now the artwork, completed by Steve Field, the borough artist for Dudley Council, has been installed at the junction of Sedgley Road and Birmingham New Road. Councillor Adam Aston and former Councillor Kieran Casey, a committee member of Woodseton Charitable Trust, unveiled the metal sculpture. Kieran said, "This sculpture is really a showcase for the companies we still have in the Black Country and Dudley. The first Abraham Darby is known as the father of the Industrial Revolution, and not many people realise he was born in the area. As far as we know, there is no other memorial to him, and I think the fact that he was born locally and what he achieved has largely not been noticed. If it had not been for Abraham Darby and his discovery, then many companies might not have been around. The setting for the memorial is very prominent, and this will act as a gateway to where Darby was born."
Now it's time to hear from our ever knowledgeable Flashback Roger for another Did You Know feature.
Hello again, everyone. Here goes with our first run in October, where my calendar informs me that we have only 11 weeks till Christmas. But ignore that just for a couple of minutes to have a listen at some bits I found out about this month. So, did you know that? The Statue of Liberty arrived in the United States all the way from France and was dedicated in October 1886. It was given as a gift to celebrate the centenary of the American Revolution and the friendship amongst the two countries. Each of the seven spikes on her crown represent the seven oceans and the seven continents of the world, and it's said to represent the universal concept of unity. Now then, World Smile Day is on the first Friday of every October each year. It's a great excuse to give a great big smile to your friends, your family, or even your boss. And who knows, it might just get you a pay rise. The Anglo-Saxons' name for October was Winterfileth. Its name contains the words for winter and full moon, respectively. It was named this because winter was said to begin from the first full moon of the month. The Saxons had a name for October too. Theirs was Winmonath, which translated into wine month, because it was the month of the year for making wine. I'm not sure about you, but I think October has just become my favourite month. Well, who would have thought it? but McDonald's opened its first restaurant in the UK in Woolwich, South London, in October 1974. Inside was found wooden seats, an ashtray on every table, and some of the cheapest meals us Brits had ever seen. Ronald's tasty hamburger, which was made 100% beef, topped with pickles, mustard and ketchup, and served in a freshly toasted bun, cost just 15p. And incidentally, that first one is still operating today. And the church in Twyford in Hampshire has a tradition of ringing its bells every year on October the 7th. The origin of this tradition goes back to the 18th century, when a local resident called William David became lost in heavy fog while riding home at night. Much to his luck, he heard the church bells toll, and from this he managed to find his way home. As a form of thanks, he left some money to the church when he died, so that the church could continue to ring their bells on October the 7th every year, just in case there were any other lost travellers. Okay then, your 2 minutes are up, and you can start to think about Christmas again. I'd better go and take my own advice and start to write my letter to Santa, although I think that these days an email was more appropriate. Mind you, they're not as easy to send up the chimney, are they? Any road up. He ignores most of my requests anyway, but I live in hope. So till next week then, I'll say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Thank you for those fantastic facts, Roger. Up next, we now have Mina, who has for us a weather update.
The weather for the week ahead looks to be settled and dry, with temperatures being unseasonably warm, hovering between 17 to 19 degrees. UV levels are expected to be low throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:26 a.m. for the sunrise and 6:23 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 8th and Saturday 9th of October, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 19 degrees. On Sunday 10th of October, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 17 degrees. And from Monday 11th of October all the way through to Thursday 14th of October, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 18 degrees. So that's your forecast for this week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Now we have our sportsman Ian giving you all the latest football news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion.
Hello, I'm Ian, and here's your latest football news. Valerian Ismail tasted defeat in the Championship for the first time as Albion boss after his side were beaten 1-0 at Stoke. On what was a disappointing night for the Baggies, the host saw Sam Surridge miss a penalty while they also wasted numerous other goal-scoring opportunities. In contrast, Albion created very little, with their only clear chance falling for skipper Jake Livermore, who prodded wide from close range. After Surridge's penalty miss in the 71st minute, it felt as if it would be one of those days where it just wouldn't go in for Stoke. But eventually they did get the breakthrough, thanks to a smart finish from Nick Powell. And that proved enough to earn a deserved 3 points for Michael O'Neill's side. Ismail believes tiredness was one reason his side underperformed, with the boss saying they will come back strong when they face Blues after the international break. I don't know if it was tiredness, but the most important thing to say is that Stoke were better tonight, the Frenchman said. Stoke are the best team we have played so far. We made too many mistakes, that's the big reason. And when you start to make a lot of mistakes like that, it's a sign of tiredness. I think in the performance we lost some energy because we weren't clinical in the pocket. We lost too many balls. We didn't create a lot of chances. We had some chances to score. But in games like this, you need to put in a performance, and that is what we will learn, that an average performance won't be enough in this league. A delightful double from Hwang Hee-chan handed Wolves their first home win of the season as they battled to victory against Newcastle. In a first half that Wolves controlled without being spectacular against a poor visiting side, the opening goal was created wonderfully by Raul Jimenez and neatly finished by Hwang. but the Magpies equalised before half-time with a controversial Jeff Hendrick strike as goalkeeper Jose Sa lay injured on the floor. The second half was fairly flat from the hosts, but some magic once again from Jimenez set up Huang for his second against the run of play. From there it was a tough battle as Newcastle tried desperately to get back into the game, but Wolves stood firm to make it back-to-back Premier League wins and their first at home this campaign. On the two goals, Large said, "That's the dynamic we want to create. When you look at our goals, it's not just about Raul and Huang. We want to see how they start. We are happy with that. That's our way to play. When you find that space in between the lines, you have to have those kind of players that can receive the ball and the other guys to attack the space. That's the dynamic we want. It's very hard to defend it. Newcastle also did this very well. They blocked our defensive line and found the spaces in between the lines. That was the plan, to try to push and open more of the spaces. It was very good because we worked all week on that situation. It brings more confidence as the players start to believe more in our work."
Thanks for that, Ian. Up next, we have another edition of Sounds of Nature, brought to us by Mina.
Male skylarks can be spotted rising almost vertically from farmland, grassland, salt marshes and moorland. They hover, singing from a great height, before parachuting back down to earth. These long and complicated song flights can last for up to an hour, and the birds can reach 300 miles. Despite their aerial activities, skylarks nest on the ground, laying 3 to 4 eggs. Chicks can become independent after only 2 weeks, and parents can have up to 4 broods in a breeding season.
This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library. Now we hear from Trading Standards Officer Darren Ward, who offers advice on how to avoid falling victim to scammers trying to sell poor quality products door to door.
I'm Darren Ward, and I'm a Trading Standards Officer who works for Trading Standards. Now, Trading Standards is a local government service that works to protect consumers and support legitimate business. We have a statutory obligation to enforce fair trading, combat illegal trading, monitor product safety, address underage sales, and verify weights and measures. The Citizens Advice Consumer Service handle inquiries on our behalf and will help with any complaint about goods and services. If it sounds like there's been a breach of the criminal law that we enforce, they'll pass your complaint on to us for further investigation. Protecting people against scams is more important than ever. Many people are facing issues as a result of the pandemic, meaning more people are in vulnerable situations. Scammers are taking advantage of this, so it's vital people have the knowledge and the tools they need to protect themselves. Scams are crimes that can happen to anyone and that we can all take a stand to help stop. There are actions we can all take to report them. We can share stories and raise awareness of scams to safeguard ourselves and others. For each subject, we'll explain what the scam or fraud is, how it works, how to protect yourself, where to go for advice, and how to report the matter. We at Trading Standards hear about many different scams. Nottingham knockers and fish sellers, which I'm going to talk about now, are just two types of door-to-door traders that might come to your doorstep and ring the doorbell. Nottingham knockers is a description given to door-to-door traders selling household goods on your doorstep. Also known as the duster sellers, they're usually young men who turn up with a large holdall full of a whole range of products, from tea towels, oven gloves, dishcloths, to cleaning products and polishes, and of course, dusters. They knock on doors offering these cleaning items, which they know are cheap and of poor quality, and offer them at an inflated price. Initially, they all came from the Nottingham area, hence the name, but these days they come from all over. They often tell you how they're trying to make a better life, saying they've just come out of prison and are attempting to mend their ways. They'll claim they're on a rehabilitation scheme, trying to find work, but they may have false permits or other false forms of identification. Nottingham knockers are not part of any recognised rehabilitation scheme, and the government-backed community payback scheme does not involve door-to-door sales. Our best advice is, if you're not expecting a caller, then do not answer that knock at the door or the ring of the doorbell. The deeper issue is that these guys are often con men who will cover a number of streets looking for a vulnerable victim that they can scam. Anyone who gives money to the doorstep traders may find themselves the target of other scams, including rogue trading. Police say that streets that are targeted by the Nottingham knockers often see an increase in distraction burglaries. This is when a person tries to gain access to your home by trying to trick you into believing they need help, or that they are officials in the area. Please remember, only deal with callers by appointment. If you're not sure, don't open the door. A genuine caller will make an appointment first, or leave you a note. Do not leave large sums of cash or money in your home. If a trader becomes aggressive or threatening, call the police on 999. We're also warning residents against buying fish from door-to-door salespersons using pressure tactics to sell large amounts. In one instance, the fish was left on a try before you buy offer with no money being needed up front. But the trader returned later and tried to charge £360 for a small amount of inferior produce. Most mobile fish sellers have regular weekly rounds, but these new vans are turning up at random locations at random times and charging much more than the average market value for low-quality fish. So we advise that you only buy fish from a reputable fishmonger at an established shop or stall, or from one with a regular pre-arranged round. With door-to-door sales, it's incredibly difficult to tell if the product you're buying has been stored properly, is safe to eat, or is in fact what it's labelled up as. If there are any problems in the future, the sellers are often quite a way away, and it won't be easy to obtain a refund from them. When products are sold on the doorstep, it means you don't have that chance to stop and shop around and check what a reasonable price is, so you're more likely to be ripped off. Residents can end up paying what's been asked because they feel pressured by the seller being in their home. As with all doorstep callers, if you do happen to answer the door, please don't get tempted to buy and ask them to leave. If at any point you feel you're being pressured, then contact the police on 999. Anyone that's been a victim of this type of scam and is wanting to report an incident or wanting advice on doorstep trading can contact the Citizens Advice Consumer Service. Their telephone number is 0808 223 1133. This also gives us at Trading Standards valuable information to assist in tackling the rogues. Please do pass this information on, particularly to any vulnerable family or friends who may get these types of visits, or onto their carers. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe.
How did you get on at this week's quiz? Well, now's the time to find out, as we head over to Mina, who asked for us the answers.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. In what year was America's Statue of Liberty dedicated? The answer, 1886. Question 2. What should we all do on the first Friday of October each year? And the answer, smile. It's World Smile Day. Question 3. What was the Anglo-Saxon word for October? And the answer here is winter filleth. Question 4. In Saxon times, what was traditionally made in October? And of course, it's wine. Question 5. In what year did McDonald's open its first restaurant? And the answer here is 1974. And finally, question 6. Where are church bells traditionally rung on October the 7th? And the answer here is Twyford, Hampshire. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to this week's Guess the Sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of someone using a skipping rope. Oh, I haven't used one of those in years. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we hear from Tanya, who reads for us a concise biography of the innovative and visually impaired 20th century writer James Joyce.
Hello, this is Tanya with a biography of James Joyce. James Joyce is one of the most well-known, innovative and challenging 20th century writers. His books were controversial and thought-provoking, with experimentation in the use of language and new literary methods. By using the stream of consciousness technique, he enabled readers to understand the, quote, interior monologues and soliloquies, unquote, of his characters, thus experiencing the way that a character is feeling. Joyce lived the greater part of his life abroad in Europe, but the characters he depicted were often drawn from acquaintances and his family at home in Ireland, saying, quote, "For myself, I always write about Dublin, because if I can get to the heart of Dublin, I can get to the heart of all cities in the world. In the particular is contained the universal," unquote. He also drew on the experience of an education in Jesuit establishments to inform characterization in his writing. He suffered ill health and deteriorating eyesight and died aged only 58. But his legacy to literature is immense. He realized the difficulties his work sometimes produced, stating that the complexities of his work, quote, "would keep professors busy for centuries arguing over what was meant, and that's the only way of ensuring one's immortality," unquote. Joyce was born into a Roman Catholic family on the 2nd of February 1882 in Dublin. He was the eldest of 10 surviving siblings. 2 others died of typhoid. His father experienced fluctuating fortunes through his work that had an impact on his family life. For example, James had to leave the prestigious Jesuit boarding school, Clongowes-Wood College, at the age of 9 when the family could no longer afford the fees. After leaving, he was initially educated at home until both he and his brother Stanislaus were sent with scholarships to Belvedere College, a Jesuit grammar school in Dublin. He did well at the school but fell out of favour when it became clear that he had abandoned his Roman Catholic faith. Clongowes was immortalised by Joyce in Portrait of a Young Man as an Artist, with the character Stephen Dedalus being physically punished for not doing his schoolwork. Dedalus is recognised as Joyce's alter ego. After finishing school, Joyce went on to study English, French and Italian at University College Dublin and read widely, being influenced by Flaubert, Ben Jonson and Ibsen. He was fluent in several languages and even learned some Norwegian so that he could correspond with Ibsen, whom he greatly admired. He was destined to become a writer himself, having begun at a very young age. Like his father, Joyce was interested in politics. This was the time of the Home Rule movement in Ireland, and at the age of 9 he courted controversy by writing a poem, Er Tú Héilí, which was a denunciation of a politician called Tim Healy for abandoning the Irish national politician Charles Stuart Parnell. His father is alleged to have sent a copy of the poem to the Pope, reflecting the close connection of politics to religion at the time. This was a hint of things to come and a commitment to repudiating any form of censorship. Whilst a student at University College Dublin, Joyce famously wrote a negative review of the new playhouse, the Irish Literary Theatre, criticising what he saw as its parochialism. The article was so scathing that he had to publish it himself when his college magazine refused to do so. The editor of the United Irishman wrote an article decrying this form of censorship, thus bringing Joyce to the attention of the wider public. Although impoverished, Joyce was part of the Dublin literary circle. He was perhaps most well known for his novel Ulysses, published in 1922, in which he used episodes of Homer's Odyssey and paralleled them in a variety of literary styles, most notably stream of consciousness. It was immediately banned both in Britain and the United States for its perceived obscene content. Prior to this, he had written Dubliners in 1914, Portrait of an Artist as a Young Man in 1916, and Finnegan's Wake in 1939. Joyce's relationship with religion appeared complex and not always easily understood, with some critics believing that as he grew older, Joyce was more reconciled to the faith he had rejected earlier. But there has been much debate over this. Joyce himself said when asked, "When did you leave the Catholic Church?" cryptically replied, "That's for the Church to say." Joyce met his longtime partner Nora Barnacle in 1903. Although in many ways it seems an unlikely match, she is often described as his muse, and they remained together until his death in 1941. She was very proud of him, but she confided to her sister that he drank too much and wasted too much money. She also felt that his writing was obscure and lacking in sense. They lived together for 27 years, travelled widely, and had two children, Lucia and Giorgio, before marrying in 1931. They'd left Ireland for Europe in 1904, with Joyce initially teaching English and settling for 10 years in Trieste. Over the years, he undertook various ventures to try and raise money, including attempting to become a cinema magnate in Dublin and trying to import Irish tweed to Trieste. In 1920, Joyce and Nora moved to Paris, with Joyce planning to finish Ulysses. He had by this time become well known as an avant-garde writer and was very fortunate in having the support of Harriet Shaw Weaver, a wealthy English feminist, whose financial backing enabled him to become a full-time writer. However, it was at this time that Joyce's eyes began to cause him more and more problems. He suffered from anterior uveitis, with 12 eye operations being undertaken in both Paris and Switzerland. He was frequently in significant pain, requiring opiates for relief. There have been some suggestions that his symptoms were consistent with a diagnosis of syphilis. Joyce wore an eye patch and would write on large sheets of white paper with a red crayon. He and Nora remained in Paris for 20 years, leaving to live in Switzerland following the Nazi occupation of France. With the help of his contacts, he was able to ensure 16 Jews escaped at the same time. Joyce died in 1941 from a perforated duodenal ulcer, just a month short of his 59th birthday. He is buried in Zurich, and his grave attracts many visitors. He is commemorated every year on the 16th of June in Dublin and elsewhere in an event known as Bloom's Day, Leopold Bloom being the protagonist in Ulysses.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!